From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. Hey, listeners, welcome to another episode of this show. I'm your host, Nate Russell. If this is your first episode, welcome. You picked a great week to join us. And if you're a returning listener, oh, wonderful to see you again. Thanks for coming back. We had some good press for this podcast come out this week. Thank you so much to Movie Maker Magazine. They listed us on a list of some of my favorite podcasts, too. But we were on a list of essential filmmaking podcasts, which feels great. And love those other shows. Check them all out. I'm a big subscriber of the Just Shoot It podcast. I love that show. And thanks to Movie Maker and Andy, the writer, for reaching out and including us on that list. Ben Hosley's here. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Nate. Congrats on the article, man.
It's great. It's nice, right?
It's really great.
It's very nice. And Movie Maker is one of my favorite sort of publications as well. You know, it's very inside baseball, but shit, so is this show.
Yeah, for sure.
And speaking of inside baseball, I mean, not really, because it's going to affect more than just those in the business, but definitely those in the business. It looks like this writer's strike is coming, Ben.
I think it's going to happen for sure.
We are just a little bit over a week away from May 1st, which is the deadline here in terms of the end of the contract that the WGA has and the authorization for the strike. I think that the vote to authorize is happening as we're recording this today. So it will have already happened by the time that this episode comes out. I just linked to a couple of articles that are very informative if you're just sort of like catching up with this, because this whole thing's happening very quickly. If you're just catching up with it, I linked to two articles. The first one is a Slash Film article that's really comprehensive. It's called Everything You Need to Know About the Writer's Strike, about what the WGA wants, what they're sort of not getting. And really, it's not simple, but it comes down to at the base of it all, the shorter television seasons means less money for writers because they are working on less episodes, but their expectation of exclusivity stays the same. So less money for, yes, less work, but also still the same sort of like restrictions on other opportunities, which, I mean, Ben, you got to agree, that does seem unfair.
Absolutely, yeah. If you're only going to work on a 10-episode season, mm-hmm. but you're not allowed to take any other work outside of that job, yes. I mean, that's not enough to pay the bills.
I mean, and it's interesting because it is such a – it's a product of – it's like what? The last writer's strike was 7 years ago, right? Or no, 10 years ago. Sorry, I'm still thinking it's 2014. It was 2007. That was 10 years ago, man. Jesus. And – you know, think about how much has changed in this landscape since then, right?
Oh, the digital element of this, you know, it's world unbelievable. Is a huge part of it now.
So the idea that the sort of working environment has changed that much, but the deals of the, you know, the deals of the contract are the same, it isn't right in some ways. But it also begs the question, you know, how do you have an equitable system that is sustainable? You know what I mean? For everybody.
Right.
And that actually links to the second article that I sent out. IndieWire had a great article. I know you haven't had a chance to check it out in detail, Ben, but this article is about how the impact of the writer's strike will be felt below the line as well. And I believe the statistic that they have is on an indie film, there's one or two writers usually and about 80 crew members below the line. So that's a lot of people who are impacted in terms of their day-to-day work that aren't even directly involved in this labor fight, right?
Yeah.
And again, it's a question. How do you create the equitable system in a world where there's so much content, which means so much work, which means there's a lot of money flowing through it, and it seems like everybody feels like they're not getting theirs, right?
Even the studio heads.
Yeah,
right?
Even the studio heads. Everybody feels that way. And yet there seems to be more content and more money than ever.
Right.
It's fucking confusing.
So I guess what we're going to find out is, are the writers going to go on strike? Also, is the government going to vote in a budget by Friday?
Right. There could be a lot of things shutting down here soon.
Yeah.
Well, this show keeps going, though.
Good.
We're going to keep talking and keep talking it out. And if anybody has any thoughts on this, on the writer's strike, or again, like, I'm still interested to sort of set something up with some stakeholders here, especially if this goes down. To talk about, you know, the nitty-gritty of it. But tweet at us. We're at UCB Digital, UCB Digital Podcast on Facebook. Always happy to talk about this stuff and get your thoughts on it as well. All right, so let's turn to today's episode. And today we have three guests on the show. There are three of our favorites around here at UCB and UCB Comedy: John Braylock, Jerome Milligan, and James the Third. If you've been to UCB the last number of years, you've seen these guys all over the stage in all different types of ways. They were on Lloyd Night, Harold Night. James does Take It Personal on Friday nights. They were part of Astronomy Club, which was both a Lloyd team and has had a couple of running shows at the theater. You can't miss them if you've been over there because they're up on stage all the time. They've also been all over our YouTube and Vimeo pages at UCB Comedy, longtime digital team members and working on projects with us. So love these guys and love to work with them. And it was really fun to sit down and talk with them about their development and growth as a group, as a comedy group, because they are not only actors and writers and producers doing stuff on their own sort of in their own career trajectories, but they have also formulated a group together that they call Black Men Can't Jump. Of course, the very popular podcast Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood over on the HeadGum Network that they are the hosts of. And along with their fourth member, James Carr, they've also started to take over the world of digital video and, according to Splitsider, are about to dominate the world of television as well, which we talk about in this episode. So they've done some Comedy Central Snapchat content. Their series Thank You Black People has been all over the Comedy Central Snapchat the last few months. And their new show, Projecting, directed by our old pal Tessa Greenberg, just finished launching all of its episodes. They're all now available at Seriously.tv. A very, very cool show that relates back. It's also related in their sort of like movie-loving world, because the podcast is all about their love of movies and analysis of movies and sort of like getting together. It feels like, when I listen to that show, Ben, it feels like you're sitting in a group of friends sort of like talking. You know, it feels like you're part of that group.
Yeah.
That's the vibe.
The vibe is definitely you're in the room with them while they're arguing about movies.
And you can tell that they are very passionate about, you know what I mean? Like, nothing's being put on in terms of that discussion.
No, but there's definitely also a love between the three of them, for sure, and
absolutely,
that bond that's there, too.
And I think you see that in the new show, Projecting, as well, which is really awesome because it's set at a movie theater and they work there. And so it still has a love of movies in the video content, but it also is like it maintains their dynamic. Even though they're playing characters, it maintains their sort of like a group dynamic and individual dynamic as well, which is really fun. It's a really fun show. And so we talked about both their aspirations as individuals in their group dynamic, how they're growing together and working and starting to work on bigger projects, and what the sort of plan is to take over Hollywood and the planet Earth by the time they're done. So really excited to chat with them about that. We also took the opportunity, as usual, to sip a Bronx beer while we chatted. James III and I both enjoyed the Bronx Banner Ale, which, of course, is it's their banner ale. It's a Kolsch-inspired ale that uses Belgian Pilsner, American wheat malts, and classic Bavarian hops. It's one of my favorite beers in the Bronx canon, and thanks to Bronx for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit thebronxbrewery.com to see all of their craft beer selections. So we sipped that while we chatted, and let's jump into it. Our conversation with John Braylock, Jerome Milligan, and James III. So you guys have had some good press come out in the last week. I saw Splitsider article that said you're like taking over the world or something.
I legit read that. I was like, I love this. Like, it was like, they're about to conquer TV. I was like,
conquering every medium. I was like, I don't feel that way, but also thank you.
Yes. No, except,
and there's only one that we don't have, which is like a paper magazine, right? Like a printed magazine.
And it was like that and a blog lifestyle. Yeah. Which I'm like, we can pull that one off.
Yeah, there was a part of me that was like, I think we have to do this now.
I guess this is a challenge that we must meet.
We can pull that off.
That's hilarious. And then I saw today IndieWire had that 10... What is it? 10 film podcasts?
10 podcasts for new... Was it beginners and
fans alike? Yeah, it was just like the top 10 film podcasts you must listen to or something. But Blank Check was on there.
Blank Check.
That's right.
And
shout out.
Yeah, it was fun.
No, yeah, that was great. So, that was unexpected and awesome.
Yeah, no one knew that was coming.
So it seemed like it was very early on in terms of the podcast that you guys were already thinking about doing stuff that transcended as a group.
Yeah,
that's fair to say.
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
Yeah, and I think that was mainly due to the fact that we realized the chemistry between us was something that was kind of special. I mean, not to sound cliche, but like,
yeah, man,
it's, we're special.
We're special. No, there was a moment where I remember before we record it, thinking, how is this going to sound? Three people talking in a podcast. You know, sometimes it gets a little hectic. Sometimes I listen to like the Nerdist, and I'm like, I sometimes like the Chris Hardwick solo episodes a little bit more,
yeah,
as opposed to the ones where there's like four of them in the room and it's like, there's too many people talking. Yeah. And so there was a part of that in my head when we went in. And then I realized how distinct our personalities were and how easily they kind of meshed with each other. And that's when I kind of realized, oh, wait a minute, this might be.
And I think the improv background helped too.
Yeah,
because,
of course.
Because you know how to not talk over each other, and you kind of can sense when someone's ending. So you can like, so there's no dead air, and it just happened without even thinking about it, really. And we both dislike James, so that's always
our histories together, just as people, helped to influence our work together as artists.
So I guess in terms of like the way you guys are working now, let's take the new Seriously show as a case study.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So when you guys are starting to like look for an opportunity like that, which is the most substantial video product you guys have done together?
Yeah, I think so. The biggest one.
The group?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of like how that comes together and how you guys are delineated roles inside of what is still kind of a scrappy production.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that has, you know, some outside, you know, support and,
yeah,
you know, institutional, yeah, support from a company like Seriously.
Yeah.
So like, how are you guys working? Like, I guess, or maybe like, how are you guys like getting that opportunity, knowing it's right for this group, and then starting to work on it together?
Yeah, I think it started out first with just us coming up with ideas of what we wanted to do for,
yeah,
a series, both digital, but with always the mindset of wanting to do a television show.
Sure.
You know?
Runway.
Yeah.
Gotta know.
Got it.
You gotta know.
And I think we all always realize that, you know, Comedy Central has this digital wing, IFC has a digital wing, you have Seriously, you have Mashable, you,
yeah,
got BuzzFeed, you have like all of these,
yeah,
Elite platforms,
Daily,
yeah,
above average,
you know, exactly, like there are all these platforms that are doing digital content, and it's much easier for networks to look at things that kind of already have video content behind it, mm-hmm, for them to greenlight stuff, especially for people they don't really know. So we were like, okay, let's think of series that we could do. What do we like? What are we passionate about? And we sat down and like came up with a bunch of different ideas, and projecting, yeah, was one of them.
Yeah, and we went to, like, we were lucky enough that like through the three of us or four of us, because this meeting Seriously came through James Carr. We had meetings at different places, so we kind of, yeah, got the feel of like what people were going to offer, what people latched on to. But Seriously, like, it was quick. It was, yeah, like a quick thing of like, oh, we like this, we'll support this, you know, very quickly. It was no like do work for free, which is not to diss people, because people do need proof of stuff, but it was, right, just like trust that no one else gave immediately, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess I'm sure there are people who listen who want to know, yeah, like, so did they call you? Or assuming, oh, yeah, like, something happens and you're, like, kind of successful, like, and people must reach out. That's not exactly what happened. I would say we use the momentum that the three of us had individually, and James Carr, so the four, yeah, of us had individually, and kind of, like, put that together and, like, form this whole thing, you know. So I know I was doing, like, character showcases, and so was James.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jarrah has, like, been working at MTV and,
yeah,
like, has,
and Eagle stuff,
you know, has, like, producer connections and people that he knows that are, you know, bringing people into pitch. And then James Carr is a writer. He had just done some written sketches for Trip Tank, that Comedy Central, like, animated show. Okay. And so he was getting some meetings through his agent. And we kind of just used all of our individual meetings. And then sometimes we, like, just met people and we were like, yeah, we're doing all of this, like this Black Men podcast, mm-hmm, thing. And people were like, oh yeah, sure. Like, bring them in too, you know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
then we, and like, and then like, once you have a couple meetings in the books, it's much easier to go to other places and be like, we're already meeting with these people if you want to meet with us. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so fascinating too, because the world and the media is so small that like, once you have one of those meetings, everyone else already knows about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, did they like that too? Oh yeah, I think we're good. I remember the day that we decided to do the show with Seriously. I remember talking to people at different places, and they'd be like, "Oh, wait,
we liked that."
Yeah, I remember immediately. Like, wait, are you guys? Oh, I thought you were gonna just come back with us. Like, no, there's options. Like, people think that like you're like they are, because you know we're all still on the come up. So it's like there's a desperation I feel like people think you have as an aspiring artist, which we do have, but people sometimes take advantage of that. But being a producer, I've been in rooms where I've seen it done to other people, where it's like people should say no, but they don't. They should. And the thing is, if they say no, they can come back and get more leverage if they just say, nah, this doesn't seem right. Yeah. And just believe in yourself. But you're so...
It's hard to have that confidence.
It's so hard because you're so excited to get in this room.
And you've been rejected a bunch of so other times,
many times
before.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to know when you have something that's worth... saying no to certain people.
Yeah, no is a scary word.
Yeah,
it is.
It's really scary.
And I think it's scary on both sides. It's like even conversations that wind up as a no, like from a pitch side, it's usually more of a ghost than a no.
Yep.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. It is.
Or it's like, if anything, you know, the hardest language they'll use is, we're not sure it's right for us at this time.
Right.
You know, it's always like, you know, not that it's not good, not that we don't like it. It's always like a very soft, we're going to just see what other opportunities are there.
Sure.
Maybe you guys have some other things that might work better with our network or, you know.
But then you always hear those stories about, one of my favorite stories is about Breaking Bad, because I love that show, and about how many places that show was pitched.
Yeah.
And people just kept saying, I don't get it. Like, I remember like reading the interview. It was like, oh, people said they didn't get it. And all it took was one person. That's all it ever is. It's just one person saying, you know what? We'll stand behind this real quick.
Yeah.
And now everyone's like, why didn't we see it? Why didn't we see it?
Yeah.
So, we should have saw this thing. We should have known this thing would have been so great.
That became a phenomenon. Like,
yeah. Like, even when you think about Broad City, how many places they went. And it's like, no one's like...
Stranger Things, similarly.
It's
like
it's 15,
15, something like that.
Oh, wow. But hindsight is 2020.
Right. Yeah,
it is.
And also, sometimes those networks are kind of right. Sometimes a show wouldn't have worked on their network.
Oh, yeah.
Nope.
You know what I mean? Stranger Things works because you could watch the full 8 hours on Netflix.
I don't think if Stranger Things was on NBC, like,
No.
I don't think it would have been a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah,
like,
no.
So with this show in particular, there wasn't a no on you guys' side. There were some sort of like maybe hesitation or just like waiting too long from other people you pitched to.
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
yeah.
Well, it was like one place wasn't excited, or they didn't feel excited, really.
There were a couple places we pitched to. One was a kind of ghosting pass.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Then another place was like, we really like it, but like, can we see some scripts first?
Sure.
Yeah.
And
did you have scripts at that point?
We didn't have scripts ready. We had a pilot for a different show that we had, like, an actual, like, you know, full 30-minute
pilot.
Which
I still love, by the
way. Yeah, and our characters in that were similar, behaved similarly
right.
to our characters in Projection.
But that show was, like, more about us being black actors in Hollywood. Like, very direct translation of our podcast.
Of the podcast.
You know, and people basically said what they say a lot, which is... we don't need another show about actors.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, we're doing something that's never been done before, right? Because we're talking about race. And they're like, yeah, but it's about actors.
But doesn't that also mean that you haven't found the right partner for, like, just what we were saying before.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
You just haven't found the right partner yet.
That's true.
Because if those people are going to say yes, they're going to say yes, but then they're going to undermine
everything.
What you actually want to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to wind up with the thing you wanted because they're just going to be like, well, now we got you on paper.
Yep.
Right.
Now but we're going to do whatever we want.
But that's also like we,
that's
you
a
know.
Great point.
That's actually a great point.
We haven't given up on the idea.
Yeah. I mean,
just inspired me. I'm like, yeah, wait a minute.
Yo, honestly.
We just haven't found the right partner.
Honestly, you're right. And it's so interesting because it's, yo, yeah. I mean, it's the thing of like, no, but.
Because now I'm too excited.
No, because it's one of those things where you're like, I remember when we did that show in particular, how excited we were
We were really excited.
But we had, when you do like a series, like, you know, for people who don't know, you do like a show Bible and like what the episodes would be like, what your first season is. So we did episodes to show, oh, you know, we have an episode that's about this and about this and about this. And remember being excited about certain episodes I'm like, oh, we have so many things we could talk about.
There are definitely a lot of episodes that are like, oh, that's going to be a fun one to shoot.
Yeah. And that was like so exciting. But then when people were like, oh, you can't do Hollywood.
It's true. They take your joy.
And also what's so funny, Nate, is like last year around this time, we were going out to networks by ourselves kind of pitching things. And they're like, no, you know what? We like you guys. Do a format show. You know, like a... infotainment show, if you will. It'll be easier to get on air. So, like, go work on that. Which we never wanted to do, but we're like, you know what? Let's do it. See if it works. Made one that we loved. Pitched it around. Everyone's like...
With a production company. So yeah. They were really excited about it.
Yeah. And it was a good idea, but it's like, you know, Insecure in Atlanta wasn't out yet. So Insecure in Atlanta weren't out, so you didn't see, like, these young, black, scripted shows. And now all of a sudden it's like, hey, man, we want scripted. What do you got
that's going to be the next Insecure?
Yeah. What do you got? We want something for like late night. We want something that's like, you know, prime time. Like, what do you guys got? You want to do a sketch show? You want to do like a...
Talk about the real gritty black shit that y'all going through.
They're like, yo, what is happening?
That's what we really want to know.
Oh, man. But it's so funny how that...
Don't chase the drag or whatever. What's the... No, that's heroin.
Well, yeah, don't chase the drag, bro.
That's
John.
That's true, too.
Yeah, John, don't chase that, bro. John rolls up his sleeve during the interview. Hey, don't chase the drag.
Don't chase the drag. Well, to go back to projecting, seriously, Sachi at Seriously was super excited about the pitch that we like gave, like in... almost in the room was like, let's do it. And we were like, that's what we wanted. That's what we're looking for.
And she fought for us hard, too. Yes. She fought for every penny we needed.
Yeah.
You know, contracts are very difficult. Yes. And it almost derailed the shoot. She fought hard to get the show on, man.
There was, like, some restructuring that was happening at Seriously, which almost, like, messed up the contracts. And I mean, this isn't a – it's not a mystery anymore. No. Like, the recent kind of layoffs that happened there – I think was connected somewhat to what was happening late fall of last year, where you know it was like they were like, I don't know, and then they were like, all right, I guess. So, yeah,
I mean, because Nate, you know, like when it comes to like online videos and stuff, every company wants to get in that space. It's like, oh, these videos do great, like let's do it, but they don't know how much it costs because they think it's so much cheaper, and it's like, no, you're still doing a show. You still need a director. You still need good editors. You still need to pay people, like, what you need.
And also something that came up before was, like, you know, online content that goes viral. Sometimes it's a produced video, and then sometimes it's, like, this dude falling down in a funny way.
Yeah.
And, like, and I feel like at some of the places when they're looking for online content, they're, like, they're trying to figure out between, like, which do I want? Do I want that, or do I want someone falling down in a funny way?
Sketch is weird now, man. You go from the formal sketches that we know, like a SNL, a Key and Peele, but then you also have people who are very popular on what used to be Vine and now have switched over to Instagram, and it's these people who are funny who get 2 million hits on a video, and literally the joke is in the video. It's like, oh, when Bae catches you cheating, and then you click on the video, and it's, oh, this is what happens when Bae catches a person cheating.
Right, which isn't
that's what it is. They didn't disappoint. They didn't lie to me.
I get it.
Which for some people that is the kind of content or the kind of jobs that they want, but that's not what you guys are like pushing for.
Right. Yeah.
So like let's just to take this like sort of case study through, and it also like I think it also helps with somebody like Sachi who also is like very into the comedy scene in New York. Mm-hmm. And, you know, was featured on the Seriously content, too. So she's on the development side. She's a performer. She's a stand-up. Mm-hmm. And also, like, was coming into a position. I think you guys also timed it right?
Yeah,
like
definitely.
She comes over there. There's an initiative happening institutionally. You've got some, like, you know, some money that is probably, like, making itself available, even though you've got to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, like, those factors that go into it, too.
Yep.
So you're going into that meeting, and for a digital program, you don't need that full show bible, full scripts. What are you walking in with for that show to get her, who also is aware, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And cool, and like down, and you know, in a position to say yes. But what are you doing in that moment to be like making it easy for her?
Well, we did have a show bible for projecting mm-hmm. that we put together that had, you know,
characters.
It had the characters, it had the synopsis for the show and for the episodes. And it was like laid out in a nice way. And we knew what we wanted to do with it. Yeah. And I felt like that was important, like us knowing what the show was and how the show worked and what made the show funny to us was what I think helped in the room with Sanchi.
And I think also, too, it's like because of the podcast, we usually know who does what business. Like, usually if you do anything with us, like, you know John is literally going to, like, steer the ship and be like, yo, I'm going to make sure the business gets out.
Yeah.
So we went into some of these meetings, like, because, John, you did a web series. Like, I work in production, so, like, we knew that you needed to have a certain type of stuff before you go in, to seem professional, right, to seem like you have every, you know, T crossed. So we knew that, and I feel like we were ready. We rehearsed a little bit.
Because at this point, we had pitched a couple of times as well. So you start to get into a pitching rhythm, too, because the pitch is a part of the mm-hmm. presentation. It's not just the actual written paper that we mm-hmm. give them, but also just selling ourselves in the room. We've gotten a lot better at that. I think we were, you know, naturally had a leg up because of, like, our podcast and our ability to improv and our mm-hmm. ability to joke and riff with each other, you know, whenever. So we kind of take that and then take the idea that we have and, like, pitch and make it fun so that people are, like, they can see it. I think that's usually what you want, right? Yeah. Like, when you're mm-hmm. pitching something, you want the vision, the picture that's in your head to, like, get implemented into their head. And so if they can see it, even if it's a different version, maybe what you're seeing, but they still have some sort of, like, vision of, like, how this is playing out, then you've won the pitch.
Because no matter what, that person you're pitching is going to have to take whatever you pitch to them up to someone else and pitch it. So the more comfortable, the more they know, the more they get excited, the better it is. Because I know for us, we've been in meetings. We get to, the start of this year later. But, like, we went to meetings this year, for instance, and people were like, we like them. We don't know about this idea, but we really like these three guys, you know, which is something that, you know, is also a benefit. So, like, if they don't get your show, it's at least a thing of, like, we like them so much. Oh, this other thing we have, maybe they can do that. Yeah. Or maybe, like, this can happen.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess the other question I wonder is, in terms of the packaging that you're walking in there with, because when you're talking about some of the TV development stuff, mm-hmm. where it feels like TV and digital differ in terms of, like, that, the ability for someone on the other side to say yes is that in TV, there's very much a consideration for what the packaging is of how this is going to be done. Mm-hmm. You guys also didn't, like, and I'm in part knowing some of this stuff because I know mm-hmm. some of the people who worked on the production.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't walk into that with a production company, production apparatus, attached to it.
And they didn't have one.
Because we didn't know we needed, like, I mean, I didn't know we needed to have one because some of these companies we went to have that kind of infrastructure
it's this weird sort of, like, line where it's, like, not quite sure how much of that is helpful mm-hmm. or not helpful. And in TV, that's not the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Down to the point where it's, like, some packaging stuff that I've been talking about, like, a lot in the last couple of years gets caught on, like, who's the showrunner?
Yeah,
exactly.
And if we're not impressed with that and that's not a good match for us, talk about network fits, it's like, who cares what the creative is?
Right.
If we don't know who's running this ship, nope.
Because the money is, because you got money invested in the thing. It's like, we can give you a bunch of money, but if you never controlled it and then never have done a production, we are now wasting money. Yeah. And no one wants to wait. Because TV and movies, we all know, is like a lose business until you can recoup, like, what you spent and then make a profit. So for us, we luckily found Tessa, who had a crew available. But there's a lot of places out right now that I've heard about who are looking for, like, talent. And some of the requirements are that you have to have the full show Bible, have the pilot script, and also have a production company that has your crew. Because they can just get, because basically no one wants to do the legwork. It's like, we'll give you the money and bring us, like, the end result.
Yeah, a good finished product.
I mean, when they realize they don't have to do the legwork for some, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when you get music for free online whenever you want, there comes a certain point in time where you're like, I don't feel like ever paying for music again.
Why would I?
It's like the networks, they're like, wait a minute, like, why do we have to do all this work when they just, look, people are doing it themselves. We just let them do it. And then we just, you know, put our name on it. And now
It seems to ebb and flow too, because I also see places that are like putting up, basically being like, we also don't want to do third party production. What we want is talent without attachment. And we'll do it through our process. Yeah. Because then we'll make sure that it comes in at the
because we can make money on every level.
Yep.
Yeah,
totally.
Every part of the process.
And that's usually, but Nate, to your questions, like that is the difference between like TV and online stuff. Like, because once you get to TV, normally you're getting into these networks, and the networks want to own and control it. So it's like they want to know. I feel like what benefited us, at least when we started to get to like real TV meetings, that we had so many social or digital meetings that we knew how to pitch, because the TV people want every answer. Like when we went out to LA, people had questions. People wanted to know, how is this going to get done? Oh, what about this angle? So we had to like be ready. Whereas digital, you can take more risk because it's digital. You know, it's like you don't have marketing really behind it. You don't have like the edit that has to be on a lot or like in a big corporation. So,
right, because they're even like, especially in TV, there are all those other ways to ensure that the money stays inside of the ecosystem and it flows through a certain way and that everybody's taken care of. And then, oh, I like you and I'll make sure that you get covered. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff. In this circumstance with this show, because I'm excited to sort of talk to you guys about where it's going.
Yeah.
You know, what the sort of secret plan to take over the world is.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a little bit. In terms of the case study of this show then, so you have the packaging that sort of like is enough to get that yes.
Mm-hmm.
You have the sort of presentation that like sells it and a partner on the other side who wants to like see it through.
Mm-hmm.
What for you guys is then the process to like make it happen? Like once you're like into it, what's the process of making it happen that you guys did, or what did you sort of outsource, and what was the process like working with a partner like Seriously in terms of the feedback loop with them, because it's going out on their channel?
Oh man, I would say our first initial idea was let's get a producer who just oversees this so that we don't really have to think about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they can like take care of stuff.
Sure.
And that's kind of the first thing that we did. And we got one. And then through conversations with Seriously, realized the budget was going to be more limited than we thought, that we did not have the means to really have somebody producing it. And also the person who was producing it, because the pay was already low for them, was not going to be able to spend as much time as they needed to get this stuff ready in the timeline that it needed to be. So we needed to help with it anyway. And then at a certain point, we were like, I guess we're producing this.
We
just got to do it, you know? So that was kind of that. I don't know.
You know, but it's interesting because like the thing, how everything turned around, everything happened really quick. So we had to do the scripts very quickly.
Yep.
And we all took one. James Carr ended up doing two. He did the pilot and the finale. Even though we all kind of pitched
it
on
out the pilot together.
Yeah, we did the pilot together, but we all took one. So we got that done quick. But when it came to like production, we couldn't figure out how involved Seriously wanted to be. Because at first it felt like they weren't going to be that involved, which is why we wanted to get a producer.
Yeah.
Then we tried to get one. It's like, oh, we can do that. But then once we were like, okay.
Yeah, we sent them a budget.
Yeah, like let's have you do it.
We're like, this is the budget breakdown. This is the line, and then they're like, oh well, we don't think you need this, and we don't think you need that, and we were like, oh, it's gonna be like this.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing that's so tricky is that we couldn't get the contracts out until the budget was approved.
Sure.
And the thing that was so tricky about the budget is that I will say this: hearing some of our friends who have like different series at different networks, we were on the higher end of like budgets for a web series. Like we definitely have money, but I think because we all have like certain standards, we didn't want to get below a certain grade of like crew.
Sure.
And gear. Yeah. Like we wanted it to look like we could use this to like pitch a show and be like, this is a proof of concept.
Yeah.
But that budget was so hard. Remember, it was a hard thing to come up with.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know the edits. Like we didn't know at that time they said they had edits for us to use, but then they didn't.
Right.
So we had to put money in for that.
Yeah.
They didn't really have money for graphics to help us do that, so we had to get graphics outsourced as well.
It's tricky.
It was.
And some of it is not to anyone's. It's like, it's also like, I think sometimes people get sensitive about being honest about this stuff because it feels like you're assigning blame in some way.
Right.
But it's also like, it's such a, because nobody knows yet how, like, the world shifts so much so quickly that, like, everything is, like, kind of a question mark.
Totally.
And I think that navigating that line between we want to make something good to make this worth our time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But also we want to, and that means having a standard of the type of people that we want to surround ourselves with to do it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But being sort of also cognizant and, my, you know, like trying to balance that with what the reality of the money, you know, money and life and time and, yeah. And the mm-hmm. whole circumstances, that's a tough balance to get done without really getting your, you know, elbows dirty.
Yeah. And we all still had day jobs. So mm-hmm. it's like the yeah. amount of time we needed to do, it was a lot, and it was quick too.
But basically once the decision was made that we were not going to have a producer take over the roles and that we would just basically produce it ourselves, the main goal was to get a director.
Mm-hmm.
And we purposely, you know, met with directors that we knew, mm-hmm. like, worked with crews because, you know,
yeah,
that's what we needed. Like, so we couldn't get a director who, like, didn't have a crew. We needed a director who had a crew. And, you know, luckily, the New York community is full of very talented, capable directors who also work with people a lot. And yeah, Tessa Greenberg obviously was our director, and she brought in people that were great. Norm was
great.
Great
yeah.
as her DP, and, you know, and Ted and everyone. They were all great. And so that kind of, like, took care of that, you know. So that's a nice weight off your shoulder knowing that that's going to happen, and that Tessa, through conversations with us, but also just working mm-hmm. with Norm, was going to start to kind of take on the technical side of things while we, you know, took on
everything.
You know, everything.
But we did hire
casting and location.
We hired Michelle.
Oh, that's true. I'm so sorry.
Michelle. Yeah. We hired Michelle to be our PM because we needed help.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And Michelle. She was great.
Michelle did a lot for very, you know,
very little.
Very little in terms of, like, what she deserved, and so we were very grateful to her as well.
You know what's also interesting, though? The UCB community, I feel like, and this was something I give John credit for, because I didn't believe that we could get so much free help. Like, when it came to, like, PAs and, like, extras, like, the UCB community helped us in ways that is just, I mean, we had like, 10 extras, like, every day. We had, like, at least 6 to 7, like, PAs who we were literally giving food and credit, and we're taking them to Jersey in the morning, and it all came from, like, those Facebook groups of just, like, you know, the digital one about PAs, like the diversity one, just like,
sure,
yeah. Oh, I mean, that's a great part about being a part of a community like UCB, where everybody is here to, you know, make stuff. Everybody wants to have a career for the most part, mm-hmm. but we understand that there are things that we do to help each other out and help each other get places, and, like, you know, as for me, at least, I knew as long as we weren't making people pay, like, the only thing that they were giving us was their time and their their, you know, talent. So they didn't have to pay for, like, travel, and they're not going to have to worry about having to buy meals when they're there. Yeah. And, like, also the meals that they get are going to be really good and not just like just pizza all the time, which, you know, I mean, I know sometimes you got to do that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, sometimes we only did it once, and it was on, like, the last day. Right. I feel like we didn't do it.
Yeah,
right?
No, you're right.
It was only once.
Right.
It was only once, and it was only because we had to do an extra day, and we didn't have time to, like, do something fancy. So it was like, yo, we had pizza, and it was a short day too.
Yeah.
So we tried. We were very cognizant of, like, treating people with respect.
Like, it's funny that pizza, it feels like disrespect.
You can't do pizza.
Which is funny because, like, personally, I never mind. Like, I
would
mind.
Love.
Like, if it was every day, you'd be like, come on.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Like, you don't want a pizza every day.
Once in a shoot?
No,
like,
once in a 5-day shoot? Yeah, yeah.
Who doesn't like
you
got to
have pizza once. I mean, yeah. God, come on, man.
You got salad.
It's also like the cheapest food that you can get for, like, mass, like, you know.
Easy.
It's easy.
That and subs.
If it's good, too, what's the problem?
Yeah, exactly.
And then in terms of, like, so for you guys, then, so you bring those folks in production, and then, like, what is it like for you guys to see it through to final delivery?
We got help from that, too, I feel like. I mean, the only difficult part I feel like we had, which I think we kind of skipped over, is, like, because of the budget and then because of the contracts, we were supposed to shoot on a Monday, and a Thursday prior, we still hadn't gotten the contracts yet. And it was like, we may have to push this shoot, which we physically couldn't do because we had the crew.
Yeah.
We had the locations. We rented
also
vehicles.
Also, we were putting our own money into things because we didn't get the money yet because the contracts
hadn't gone through.
But like, we had to put deposits down on the location, on the gear. You know, luckily, Darrell was balling a little bit.
I legit had a fund just in case. Because my thing is, like, we've talked about it loosely for, like, years now, just in case we go to L.A. So I'm like, okay, I got this money to get me to L.A. But we had no, we had to put it into the show.
Yeah.
We had it back, though. But it was, like, it was very last minute.
It was a little scary.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
You know?
But, yeah, that happened. And then I guess the other thing that happened was, you know, during the shoot, a fire alarm went off because we used the smoke machine, like, fog machine. And it set the alarm off in the whole building. And at first we were like, all right, we were kind of ahead. An hour delay is like, it'll be an hour delay at most, and it's not going to be that bad. And then what we didn't realize was that this building is super old. Apparently it had a bad relationship with the fire company or the fire marshal specifically. And so, you know, there was a fear that just the theater would get shut down. And so to appease that fear, we had to cut the day. And it was only like 11 a.m. Like,
it was,
we were supposed to film until like 4:30. And so
that was our last day too, right?
It was our second to
last day.
And I was unavailable on Friday.
Oh,
and
so James is famous low-key.
No, not low-key famous, but it was like my whole heart just disappeared. I was like, it sunk in my chest because I was so scared that we would need another day and I wouldn't be able to be there, which is ultimately what happened.
But to Tessa's credit, like, Tessa reworked that schedule and got us home, man.
Yeah, we packed the whole, we packed
she got
everything with James into the next day, like pretty much most of the scenes that we needed, and then a lot of the, you know, exterior, extra shots, things like that, we like just left for Friday, and it worked out. It worked out, and then we hired Nathan.
Yeah,
Flooding,
which came from comedy. Like, it's so
funny
because
the
world is so small that like Nathan, our editor, came from Comedy Central. Like, I went to Comedy Central, and they knew at that point we had went with Seriously, and it was no bad blood. They were like, oh wow, yeah, I went with them, and they were asked about it. How is it going? And I was like, yeah, we need an editor. We need someone who's good, but like, we can't have a lot of money. And they were like, oh, Nate was doing our digital stuff for, was it Amy Schumer at the time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was doing some Amy Schumer videos.
Her
shorts. And he, to his credit, he just wanted to meet more people. Like, I think he even offered to give money back at certain, but like, he just wanted to meet more people. And he did a great job. We were in his house on weekends.
He also edited one of Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that I had to do on Friday. which was crazy.
Wow. Yeah, so it was like me. It was to Nate's credit, it was us three, James Carr, and Tessa all in his edit. All, like, we tried to come in
after initial round of passes. Yeah.
And we tried to, like, all give notes. And he was so patient, so calm.
Wow.
That dude was great.
So that's very sort of like, that sounds like a very sort of like down and dirty elbows, you know, elbow grease type process.
Yeah.
And that also must be informative to you guys in terms of moving forward, like working together, like that, because it also sounds like as stuff gets more ambitious, the stakes get higher, the fuck ups get more, more costly.
Yeah.
And also, like, you sort of see the stress happen. It sort of like pulls at your fabric a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess moving forward, like, what, like, how do you guys come out of that, like, looking to do projects in the future? Or, like, how did that inform, like, your creative process or your, like, teamwork process?
I mean, it's great. It's great in two ways. One, it allows us to move forward with the confidence of knowing we could complete a series, you know, that we could produce things, that we can help with the edit. Like, it shows a competence and skill and also work ethic, you know, that we have, that we're willing to put everything we have into something that we really believe in. So we can move forward with that confidence. And then at the same time, I know me personally, I kind of live by the philosophy of, like, the next thing I do, I always want it to be a step up from the thing that I did before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, there's a part of me that's like, cool, that was great, but I'm never doing that again.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Like, you know, or at least not at that same level. Like, if things have to be dirty again, like we might do it, but it has to be at a bigger level than the thing that we just did before. So I think that's how I look at it.
Yeah.
And working together, I think it's an interesting thing too, is because it's like four of us. If one, I feel like, you know, because I am very emotional, if like one of us gets mad about something, then the others can like handle it. Like if it's something that happens on set, like I remember the fire incident, like myself and Tessa went out to handle that. But then if it was like a shoot thing, like maybe John and James Carr do it, or then James Third would do something else. So that way everyone isn't stressed and weighed down because we can relieve the pressure of certain things with each other, which is very helpful, I think, to have a group. Mm-hmm. And because I think now, because of the podcast and some of the articles and stuff that have been written, is that we kind of know, oh, the four of us will make it together. So it's like there's no hierarchy. It's like it's us four. We got to make this work. We're really good at crashing edits and like sketches. So it's like, okay, let's just do it and make peace and keep it going, you know?
And then I also think that there's like a level of like what we learned from this is also just how our narrative ideas look, you know, in a finished product. And so like this now is like, okay, this is what worked. This is what did. We now know what worked and what didn't work and like a direction that we can go that way too.
Sure.
And I can say the next step, man, is I want a show. Like, I feel like, and the thing is so tricky, and I feel like people think I get mad when I say it. It's like, and I'm never mad, but I feel like we have done enough. like, in all honesty, like, all these articles are coming out about.
Yo, we've done enough!
Like, but all these articles come out, oh, you guys have done, like, all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, it's great, but it's also because we had to an extent. Like, we had to, like, prove that we could be, like, reliable. Had to prove that, like, we could create. Had to prove that we were funny, that we could do these things. And it's like, it was fun to do, but it's like, hey, man. Like, you know, the podcast, the web series, the Snapchat, the Instagram, it's so many things, Facebook videos. It's like, yo, we've done that. We've done it.
You know, you know what's funny is like, and I totally hear what you're saying from that perspective. Like, two things. One, and I love this quote. I think about this quote all the time. And someone, I don't remember who told me this quote, but they attributed it to Caitlin Bitsigai. Mm-hmm. And it was that like, this business is like a pie eating contest, that the prize at the end is pie. You know what I mean?
True.
And two, I just heard a story about The Rock where it related to all these like events, these like movie, I don't remember what it's called. The movie studios do these like almost like upfronts in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was talking about how he was flying back and forth every day for different studio projects in order to go back to LA and film something and then go down to Miami and film Ballers. He was like making all these appearances.
Wow.
It's like, it doesn't get any less. And that's like
the
number
hectic.
One movie
show. Oh, yeah.
It doesn't get any less like you're still paying those. You know what I mean? Like,
the dues change. Like, the level of the dues change.
Okay, I'll restate. I'm ready to level up in these things.
That's what I mean, too. Like, it's not like I don't expect the workload to get less. If anything, it will be more. Because my ambitions
will get bigger.
Like, I know they
are
big.
I've done that. I now want to do this.
There's a reason that we were willing to put everything it took into a freaking web series that, like, we know only a couple thousand people are going to see. At the most, you know what I mean? Like, 50,000 or whatever. Yeah. And, like, but the thing is, we know there's a goal in mind. There are things that we want to do in mind, and it's never going to stop because we have this creative, you know, thirst that never gets quenched. You know, you do something, you do a thing that you're super proud of and you love and that you get great feedback for and people tell you is great. And then once it's kind of over, you're like, well, I need to do that again. And I want to do something else, you know?
Yeah, no. And that's that. Yeah. I think that's all I mean to raise. It's like, it's such an interesting thing where it's like, you sort of have this thing's a meal and this thing took a lot out of you guys. And essentially you're saying I'm still hungry.
Yeah.
I mean, cause even right now we got those conversations so of like, all right, web series is out, is done. Instagram is done. All right, let's move on and get this next thing, because that's how the world works.
Yeah.
It's like next week, so, like, we work, especially here at UCB, next week, someone else will have, like, the next web series or, like, Instagram video. So it's like, okay, cool, we've done that. Let's move on and get this show, man. Let's get this Deadline article, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, you always want something in the back.
Yeah, always.
Burner. You always want a couple of coals,
coals in the fire?
Yeah,
because,
like, irons in the fire.
Yeah, because, I mean,
The Rock is crazy. I'm just thinking about, he has the Baller show, He's in the, you know, all these movies, like his superstar movie. He's producing and everything. Starring in that HBO, that new HBO, like reality TV show.
Bro, he also has a CNN show, which I didn't know about. He's a doc. He's producing this doc about music and like how music has impacted people's lives.
Oh, I did see that.
Lives.
I saw that.
The Rock has
that.
So many, and he has all those TNT like inspirational like.
What?
I'm taking people out of like their.
My man.
Yeah. Man, that brother is working.
Working. Like,
working
amazing.
Hard.
It's what? Insane.
The Brahma Bull.
So let me just ask this then, because I think that like starting to hear the scoop here is the secret plan take over the entertainment business. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the elephant in the room is. And you brought this up already, L.A. Is an L.A. move for you guys, like, do you talk about that as we're moving to L.A. and you got other people in your lives, too?
Yeah.
Or is it maybe I'm moving to L.A.?
Well, to me, it was always
the thing,
I'll
right?
go first. Yeah. I've been talking about it for a while. To me, it became a we, which is why I haven't left yet.
Okay.
Because I think there is, unless someone books a show, I think there's more power in the group than it is in the individual. Because, like, if one of us moved to L.A., then how does that affect the podcast? How does it affect like what we do with Comedy Central? So it's like it is tied. But it's difficult for me because I know I can say I can move, but I know James is engaged.
Yeah, no, I definitely
like,
can't move.
Like, he can't just do that. Like, I know John has a girlfriend like of a couple of years. So things are different now. But the hope is that most of these networks are on both coasts. So it's like, you know, we can ride out here, then maybe it'll make things easier for the West. But
yeah, you know. I was just talking with my fiance about this just last night. And we were just trying to figure out, like, it's like, do we just move or are we waiting for like a thing to take us out there? You know, because she's an actress as well. So like she's into the business and like she would benefit from a move, you know, or could benefit from a move as well. But it's so hard to figure out.
Yeah. I mean, no, I do. I agree. I think at least for now, it seems like the move we would want to, you know, synchronize that.
Yeah.
And go in with as much heat as possible. And the thing is, it's hard to know when. I think people who are in New York are always talking about it and like, do I have to do it? Is it inevitable? Or, you know, am I missing out? I do know. I feel like the people I've seen move to LA, you know, for the most part, unless they had like something like fueling them as they went out there, like it takes a little bit of time to before
it's a restart.
You know, it's a restart. So to me, unless we saw ourselves like dying out here or like unless it was like, uh-oh, we haven't done anything in a while, you know, I don't think that's the case. So I also want to have like a bunch of things in our back pocket when we go out there. So right, make the most of it.
Because LA's that thing of like, it's so sunny. It's so bright. Everyone's like, oh, like every time we go to a meeting, when are you moving? When are you moving? But then.
Right. You want to keep that up.
Yeah. You want to keep that.
You want the, because we've been out there now, three times as together?
Twice.
Twice.
One Astronomy Club and then one just with us.
Okay. So both, both times we've been out there and have taken meetings as like the three of us, it's like, oh, you guys sound great. Like, are you guys moving here? You know, if you can keep that kind of like, that sense of like, we want you, but we can't have you yet.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's good to have until you're like, okay, no, now you need to have us.
Right.
Yeah.
See, to me, ideally, even now that we're talking about it out loud, is we went out there earlier this year. To me, what would be dope is that maybe at some point in the summer we went back and we could lock something in at least. So that way when you come out, you know that you're working on a thing. Because we've had friends who've moved out there and we spoke to when we were out there last time who went out there with a lot of heat and now it's kind of like you just live here now. You know, now you're just in the system. You're now just an out of work like person pitching, which is fine because you're in the meetings. But I think if we went out and say we went back to like, you know, a Comedy Central in LA or like we went back to a TBS, it's like, oh, we're developing this thing with TBS. So now that will give us the heat that we need.
Right.
Or if we have if we do a show at UCB Franklin or something like that, it'd be.
And if we were to move out, we would prefer to move together. But I don't know what the group necessarily prefers to do, like if we prefer New York over LA. But when we were pitching our show, it was like, oh, it'll be cool if where it gets picked up is LA.
Yeah, I mean, ideally.
I remember feeling that energy.
I mean, for me personally, it's like, I always loved the idea of like, if we had a show And I know it's not the point, but the idea of like what Broad City did, they were able to give people like their first credit, you know, like a lot of people's first TV credit is Broad City. And I think if we had a show here in New York, we'd be able to like do the same thing for other people, whether it's like in the UCB community or like our friends who are actors outside of it. Yeah. We'd be able to do that here, whereas in L.A., there would be people we know, but not the people we did like Triple Crown shows with, sure. You know, like people you got dirty with when you're doing shows with like only the other performers are there, you know, who has some people who haven't even got that shot yet. There are a lot of people in the community who don't have like reps and haven't, you know, even auditioned a lot. Like we could help those people, you know, while helping ourselves, because we could be the people who had like the such and such before they blew up, you know. And there's a beauty to that to me that I think would be great if we could do it here.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's why I was like this last question connects back to the first question of how are you thinking about like where you guys are at. And it sounds like when we first started, there was a little difficulty in answering the question, but it almost sounds like you guys are thinking about what is best for this, you know, iteration.
Yeah.
As much as for self in terms of like that. It's interesting because, again, it feels like it's like there's a lot of things happening, but that also means there's lots of opportunities for it to fall apart, too.
Yeah, yeah. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, it is. But the thing is, like, it's interesting because, again, I feel like the power's in the group. And the thing is, too, think about how fun that is if you make it with the people that you started out with. Yeah. And then, listen, once we make it, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can go crazy.
All bets are off.
Like, once you make it, like, you can worry about all that other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel that, though, 100%. Like, especially the, like, making it with the people that you started with. Like, this is not the exact same thing, but I keep recalling hearing Steve Carell talk about the 40-year-old virgin and then saying something like, you know, it was just like this idea that we came up with at Second City. And then, like, just hearing that and then, like, knowing that at the time that he's talking about it, that idea is far away from the time when he was at Second City.
Yeah.
Like that is enticing to me. Like that idea of like, this thing that I was doing when I was in the trenches is now this thing that like is what I'm making my most money out of. And I'm doing it with or talking about it with people that I worked with.
Yeah. I also see it like, I think the ideal version of how this plays out is like a Key and Peele or a Broad City.
Yeah.
Where you have a show that the group does together that it becomes popular and successful, and then that allows the individual members to also go ahead and do the things that they want to do. Mm-hmm. And that kind of team is always going to be there and like can always come back and do something. You know, I kind of hope and imagine that our podcast will last throughout whatever iteration of thing we become or our individual careers become. But in terms of like individual projects, like, you know, it's probably at this point more beneficial for us to stay together and try to get break in through the power of the three of us and then do the individual thing than like us try to pursue our individual things separately, like prioritizing that over us as a group and then like maybe all three of those fail.
And it's so hard, too. Yeah, right. It's so hard, too, because, like, I go into every audition like, I hope I book this.
Totally. Like,
every time you want to book it.
Oh, yeah.
I hope I'm about to book this right now, you know?
But I know I've said to you guys, well, my rule is, if one of y'all book a show in L.A., I'm easily coming. Like, the thing is, like, because to me, it's
well,
like,
we know
oh,
you're easily coming. You have that. We already know about your egg. Your
no, listen, man. Listen, man. I'm saying, I'm not even going to use that because I'm living where y'all living at. Paying no rent.
Cool. Did you like the Bronx Banner?
It was very good.
It's good.
James was straight up peer pressured.
I started this going, I don't want a beer. And then I was like, well, I mean, if you have it.
But you have a rule. Like, James legit has a rule of, like, I will never turn down a free beer.
Why turn down a beer that someone's offering you?
Are you a beer?
I have the same rule about food.
You won't turn down food?
Yeah. If someone's like, do you want some of this food? Like, unless I just ate, I'm not going to turn that food down.
That's a good point. You never say no to food.
That's food. It's food. It's, you know, it's why we're, you live to eat, and you eat to live.
You were so poor when you were a kid, huh?
I'm so poor right now. I'm so poor
right
this
now.
Moment.
See, this is why we need a show, so James can go and get a steak and get a real meal. Yeah, you gotta feed James.
Well, congrats on the new show, guys. It sounds like you guys are working pretty hard, and, you know, excited to see what the future holds.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so people watch that Seriously YouTube page. You can watch all the episodes of Projecting. Go on Comedy Central's Instagram. The videos are still there. You'll see us because we the black dudes on Comedy Central's Instagram. True. Do it. Love you.
All right, that'll do it for episode number 41 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Gerard got his plugs in there at the end, but of course, do check out their Seriously.tv show, Projecting. Check out the Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood podcast. And check out all the individual stuff that those guys are working on, too, because they're great individual performers and writers and comedians, as well as an awesome group with a fucking great dynamic. Really great to chat with them. And thanks to those guys for taking the time to do it. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this show. If you like it, if you feel like it's a valuable part of your filmmaking development, the nice ways that you can reach out to us are Twitter at UCB Digital, Facebook at UCB Digital Podcast. You can also subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. We always appreciate that. We've got new episodes coming out every single Tuesday until the earth explodes, which might be soon, y'all. Might be soon. Thanks to Lanny Harms for doing a little research on this episode today. And thank you to the Bronx Brewery, the official house beer of the UCB Digital Podcast and the UCB Podcast Network. We enjoyed that golden banner ale, the Bronx Banner, and we'll enjoy another one next time. You can enjoy a Bronx beer the next time you're at the UCB East Bar, and go to thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all of their awesome craft beers. That'll do it for us. As usual, you can follow UCB on all things social media at UCB Comedy. We've got new videos on YouTube and Vimeo, including a fun one coming out May 2nd that is timed to work with all of the expiring Google YouTube video annotations. So as soon as that expires, we're going to send it off with a nice little sunset cruise with a fun interactive video that uses that really wasteful technology. But thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time. And until then, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.